Good morning. It is 8:06 on this Tuesday, December 31st. Happy New Year's Eve. I'm Christine Weller, filling in for Leslie Thatcher on the Local News Hour. As far as traffic at the moment, no big impacts, but of course, there's always the morning traffic rush. So as always, watch out for some traffic around Kimball Junction and off 248. It is currently 16 degrees Fahrenheit in the Park City area. The high today is 49 degrees. Over in the Heber Valley, it is 18 degrees Fahrenheit with a high of 53. With a more in-depth weather update, we've got ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Happy New Year's Eve, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at partly cloudy skies as we go throughout your Wednesday, turning into mostly cloudy skies by the afternoon hours. We'll be looking at those temperatures warming up into the upper 40s in Park City, with high temperatures in the low 50s for us in the Heber Valley. As we head into your Wednesday night, as the clock strikes midnight, we're going to be looking at increasing chances for primarily rain showers building in from the south and west. There is a chance that with temperatures right around the freezing mark, as those rain showers begin to move in, we could see that begin as a little period of some freezing rain, or maybe a little bit of a rain snow mix, but chances are it would be more freezing rain. And that's of course when rain falls and freezes on contact with surfaces because the temperature is below freezing. We'll keep a close eye on that. Right now, not expecting any significant icing, but it is a possibility that we do want to let you know about. So be careful for your early morning travel, or if you're traveling overnight while celebrating. Otherwise, as we go throughout your day on your New Year's Day, plan on unsettled conditions with off and on rain showers throughout the day. Not a complete washout, nothing too heavy, but we will have off and on rain showers throughout the day. We'll keep that unsettled weather pattern into your Friday morning with a chance of a few showers, drying out with some sunshine by Friday afternoon. Saturday starts off with a mixture of sun and clouds. We'll see those temperatures in the mid-40s for highs in Park City, highs in the low 50s for your Saturday in the Heber Valley. But by the time we get towards your Sunday, we'll be tracking another wave of moisture that could move in. That could provide us with a rain-snow mix for us in Park City, with a chance of some rain showers developing in the Heber Valley. Highs will be in the 40s as we go throughout your Sunday. As we move into your Monday, that could taper off as a little bit of a rain-snow mix in the Heber Valley. And we'll be looking at that chance of snow going into your Monday morning in Park City. High temperatures will be in the low to mid-40s as we go throughout that time frame. Tuesday, we'll be looking at more unsettled conditions with partly to mostly cloudy skies, cooler conditions, highs in the upper 30s in Park City, highs in the low to mid-40s in the Heber Valley. That's a look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Kings.
Online with us, we've got Utah Avalanche Center forecaster Drew Hardesty with more on conditions in the backcountry. Thanks for joining us, Drew.
Hi, good morning, and happy almost new year. In the backcountry, we have a generally low avalanche danger, except for in the higher elevations, generally in steep, thin, rocky terrain, where it's possible that one might be able to trigger a hard slab 1 to 3 feet deep. The snowpack structure is fairly complicated right now, with weak, faceted snow near the ground. The Christmas Eve rain crust is sort of capping that weak structure, but it's pretty difficult to collapse that crust. That crust is 1 to 2 inches thick in many areas, up to 3 inches maybe or more. And the only avalanches we've heard in this structure occurred on Sunday. There was one skier that triggered an avalanche up in the Sunset area between Alta and Brighton in the backcountry. A couple other ones that were triggered intentionally by ski patrol teams, also in Little Cottonwood Canyon. But I think it would be very difficult to trigger one. It would just be curtains, I'd say, if you did. So we're just leery of the current structure. We just want to give it a bit more time to see if it's going to trend towards dormancy. Otherwise, really, the pro tip I would recommend is just being on low angle, northerly facing slopes, where that storm that came in on the 26th is still excellent skiing and riding in the backcountry. So it's essentially, it would be low risk but high reward to be on low angle, northerly facing slopes. And so that's the tip for today. And hopefully we'll have a storm that delivers for us in the next couple days. So stay tuned.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the update, Drew.
Hey, thanks.
Coming up on the local news hour this morning, we've got point in time homelessness count leaders, Amanda Christensen and potentially Heather Hogue. She's sick, so we'll see. They're going to share how locals can participate in the annual count on both sides of the Wasatch Mountains. Then Utah Olympic Park General Manager Jamie Kimball has an update on the park's facilities and events. And Austin Smith from Bogus Basin Ski Resort in Boise talks about an unconventional early season snow solution. After that, stay tuned for the mountain life at 9 o'clock. Longevity expert Ken Stern reveals why the secret to a longer, healthier life isn't just diet or exercise, it's a social connection. Then journalist Mary McKenna unpacks the rise of peanut allergies and the groundbreaking treatments that may change how we prevent and even cure them, and what it could mean for children's health and safety. Got some time for some local news. Wasatch County Councilmember Luke Searle will run for the Utah House of Representatives in 2026. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports Representative Mike Kohler won't seek another re-election.
After 4 years on the Wasatch County Council, 30-year-old Heber City resident Luke Searle plans to run for state office. Searle said Tuesday District 59 incumbent Mike Kohler encouraged him to enter the race. Kohler has held the seat since January 2021 and told KPCW he will not run again. Searle, a father of three, says he's running for the State House of Representatives because he understands the pressures facing Utah families.
I feel as though Utah is becoming harder and harder to raise a family in. And so working on that, making every decision focused on the family is important.
If elected, Searle told KPCW he will focus on property tax reform and school curricula that prepare students for careers. He says he also cares about Utah's cost of living and keeping the size of the government in check. Searle was elected to the Wasatch County Council in 2022 as one of two at-large members, his first foray into politics. As a county council member, Searle says he has worked to give locals a voice. Now he wants to do the same at the Utah Capitol.
I've listened first. I've done my best to limit the government and trying to stand up for families and for the future generation.
In his years on the council, he's taken a particular interest in the cost of living for elderly Wasatch County residents, backing a more robust tax abatement program for locals over 65. Representative Mike Kohler, a Republican and a lifelong Midway resident, is in his third term in Utah's House of Representatives. He says he's not seeking another term because he wants to spend more time with his family. District 59 covers all of Wasatch County and part of Summit County, including Park City. Searle's decision to run for the Utah House of Representatives will leave his seat on the county council open in November's election. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
On the phone with me, I've got point in time count leaders Heather Hogue and Amanda Christensen. They're calling in to tell us how locals can participate in the annual count on both sides of the Wasatch Mountains. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I wanted to start out with Amanda. Can you just give us an overview of what the point in time count is?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having us on today. The point in time count is really a snapshot of homelessness that's taken in one night in January across our communities and nationwide. This count is actually required by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. So we have to kind of get this snapshot and a number, do the count of a number of individuals that are experiencing unsheltered and sheltered homelessness across our community in order to access federal funding. And so this is what we do every single January to really give us a picture of how many individuals are experiencing homelessness in our community at this one given time.
Okay. I know you mentioned that this helps access federal funding. Can you explain a little bit more about why the count is important and kind of what that data is used for?
Yeah, the data, it's like I said, it's required by HUD in order to access funding. Also, it really helps to guide our local planning and services and even policy decisions because it helps us to understand the individuals who are experiencing homelessness, not only data around how many folks we have currently experiencing homelessness in our community, but also we do a survey during this point in time count with individuals that helps answer questions around what some of the needs are of these folks. And it helps us to show trends really over time. So we're able to compare this data, you know, year to year to see, you know, what's improving, you know, areas that we need to refocus and focus on in our communities to help address homelessness.
Okay. And Heather, can you tell us a little bit about this year's effort and how locals can get involved?
Absolutely. I apologize for my voice. I've got that seasonal bug. I run the point in time count for the Wasatch Back, so Summit County and Wasatch County, as well as Utah County. We will have signups for the public to access as of January 1st on our website, which is mountainlandcoc.org. We're looking for volunteers to help us count in the morning and volunteers to help us count in the day and along the Wasatch Back. You know, it's hard to find people that are camping out, that are sleeping out in Summit County, Wasatch counties. People are pretty self-reliant, and if they've dug in for the winter, it can be a little difficult to find them. So we're looking for some additional public support to help us find people that are in need.
And how many volunteers are needed this year?
I'm needing about 24 for the Wasatch Back. I'm also looking for Utah County. I'm needing another dozen or so for Utah County. And then I know Salt Lake City also has needs for volunteers.
Amanda, can you speak to the volunteers needed on the Wasatch front at all? Usually how many are needed up there?
Yeah, we typically have about, or really seek to have about 300 individuals. So it's a large effort in the Salt Lake Valley. And folks can sign up. So our count is going to be the mornings of January 29th through Saturday, January 31st. And it's really from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m., so it is pretty early. And folks can sign up to participate and volunteer in the count at endutahomelessness.org, going over to that Salt Lake Valley tab, drop down, and then to the point in time count.
Okay. Are there any requirements for people to volunteer? Do they have to do any trainings before participating in the count?
Yeah, so we do provide trainings to volunteers, basically to talk through what the survey looks like and how to approach folks and all of those types of things. And so that training happens on Wednesday, the 28th, that night. We also have additional trainings on the website that folks can access. So if they just head over to endutahomelessness.org, they can see all of that and sign up.
Okay.
And our training for the Wasatch Back are virtual.
Okay, good to know. And Heather, I know you mentioned that the count in the Wasatch Back looks quite different from the Wasatch Front. Can you kind of speak a little bit more about why there's those differences?
Absolutely. You know, Salt Lake Valley is definitely more urban. It's easier to find people that are out on the street or out in places that are not meant for habitation. When we're looking at the Wasatch Back, you know, Summit County is a unique demographic as far as a combination of businesses and local shops. And then Wasatch County is roughly pretty rural in most of it. So as we're going out for the count, we're looking at hot spots that have been identified by first responders. We're looking at hot spots identified by service agencies. And a lot of our focus is also on the day count, where we have a list of individuals that we've identified receiving services that we're going to try to find at a service agency that day or through outreach teams that will be going out that day. We'll be trying to find, count, and help assess some of their needs, so that as we do our strategic planning in the new year, we know how to meet some of those needs.
Okay, great. And I also wanted to talk a little bit more about last year's count. Overall, throughout the whole state, it found there was an 18% increase in Utah's homeless population. Amanda, can you talk a little bit more about why we might be having an increase and kind of maybe how that might compare to this year?
Yeah, you know, I think that overall what we're seeing is, you know, as costs increase and continued issues with lack of affordable housing, we have folks that are experiencing a housing crisis. And so that results in more individuals needing to access shelter and or sleeping in cars, and experiencing unsheltered homelessness. I think that this year we probably will see similar numbers across at least the Salt Lake Valley. I think we're just in a situation where we really need to focus on affordable housing, increasing folks' income so that they can kind of stay afloat and stay housed.
Yeah, and kind of the bright side of last year's count and the data that was gathered in January of 2025 was that while there are more people experiencing homelessness in Utah, there were more people accessing Utah shelters. So I'm wondering if you can also kind of share what resources are out there for people who need them.
Yeah, for sure. So we have multiple shelter options, and we actually increase capacity during winter months. So we are in full kind of shelter overflow mode within Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County. And so really anybody can kind of show up to any of the local resource centers to see if there's bed capacity, as well as contact our phone line, which I am facing right now and will need to look up shortly.
While you look that up, Heather, could you speak to maybe some of the resources that we've got in the Wasatch Back?
Absolutely. So we have expanded our code blue options for hotel access in the Wasatch Back. So anytime that we have a temperature dipping below 18 degrees, including wind chill, which is pretty frequently in the Wasatch Back, we have expanded our hotel access through after hours. So our police departments and our county sheriff's departments have access to our service agencies to place people in a hotel after hours if those temperatures drop. And in Utah County, we have a warming center available 7 nights a week, regardless of temperature, that takes people in regardless of their situation.
Okay, great. And Amanda, do you have that number?
Yep, I do. So for Salt Lake City Homeless Services Assistance, you can call 801-990-9999. And basically, you'll be able to see if there's any bed capacity within our system and be able to direct any individual to a bed within the system.
Great. Heather, Amanda, anything else you think the community should know about the point in time count?
I think in the Wasatch Back, we're very excited about capturing some of the demographic and the data that we haven't in the past. We've got a pretty big concerted effort with our community partners and with our community service agencies to go out. I'm really excited about the organization behind the scenes. We're seeing two rising demographics of people experiencing homelessness in the Wasatch Back. One is seniors on fixed incomes. We're seeing an increase in that. And the second is seeing an increase of people who are working and experiencing homelessness for the first time. So part of what we're going to be looking at is who is receiving income and also experiencing homelessness for the first time, and how can we connect them with services that might help.
All right. Anything else, Amanda?
Yeah, just similar to Heather, supporting everything that she's saying, just said. I also did just want to make one correction that our training will be on Monday, January 26th from 6 to 8 p.m., and so I wanted to just correct that. And we're excited. Please come out. We're also looking for some physical donations, like hand warmers, socks, coats, things like that, to be able to provide to folks. If anybody's interested in donating items, they can donate them to Switch Point, which is at 2333 West North Temple in Salt Lake City. We're basically accepting those donations between now and January 23rd. We also are accepting monetary donations to buy things like hand warmers, bottled water, things like that. And that can also be found on the website.
Okay, great. Thank you both so much for joining me. We've been speaking with Point in Time Count leaders Heather Hoag and Amanda Christensen. While many locals may be a bit lethargic after a late night celebrating the new year, Utah State Parks is continuing an initiative to get Utahns up and outdoors on New Year's Day. Utah State Parks spokesperson Ali O'Rulian said parks across the state are hosting ranger-led hikes on January 1st, and those who participate get a limited edition sticker.
These first day hikes are an initiative to start the year on the right foot, so to speak. And if you're new to winter hiking and you want to get started with a ranger-led hike, this is a great way to do it.
In the Wasatch Back, Jordanelle State Park and Wasatch Mountain State Park are participating. At the Jordanelle, locals can take self-guided first day hikes on the Boardwalk Trail, Three Rocks Trail, or the Perimeter Trail. Wasatch Mountain's New Year's hike is actually January 2nd, but for good reason. It's a snowshoe hike under the full moon. Also in northern and central Utah, Willard Bay State Park and Antelope Island State Park will host New Year's Day hikes. Aurelian said those who do plan to hike this winter should be prepared.
First and foremost, keep yourself safe. So check the conditions, scope out the trail. If you're new to winter hiking, try with some trail that you've done before, something that's a little bit easier.
Aurelian said hikers should bring a backpack with extra clothing layers, sunscreen, water, and a snack. Water should be in an insulated container or can be wrapped in a sock so it doesn't freeze. Recreationists should also always tell someone where they're going and bring a phone in case of an emergency.
Keep it warm, keep it close to you so that in case of emergency, you can call. Even if it says that you don't have reception, you can still call 911 in case of emergency and they may be able to locate you.
For those not as interested in hiking, Aurelian said state parks have a lot of other things to offer, including educational programs and birdwatching. Christine Weller, KPCW News. And in studio with me, I've got Utah Olympic Park General Manager Jamie Kimball. He's here with an update on the park's facilities and events. Welcome.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So I first wanted to discuss the weather, the obvious. How is the Utah Olympic Park managing with the minimal snow in the area?
Yeah, definitely. No, it's a challenge for us as it is for everybody here in the community in the Park City area. So, but we're working through it. We were lucky enough to get some snow on the ground and get our Alpine training venue open earlier in the year and kind of make it almost to Christmas before we had to take a few days off, and then that cold snap hit right after Christmas. So we were able to get kids out skiing again right over the holiday, which was great for them, be out sliding around. Obviously, it has definitely hindered some of our other training areas around the park, but I got to hand it to the ops crews out there for pushing through, getting creative, adapting to the scenarios to try and do whatever we can to get kids on the snow and still being able to train. We, it's interesting, we had enough time where we actually took the nets and cables back off some of our development hills so the Nordic kids could continue to jump even when we didn't have snow. And then we were able to build a mogul jump on the aerial site, which we couldn't run the aerial site, but the mogul kids were able to train a little bit. So we've really been moving around and trying to get creative to keep the programs training until Mother Nature actually kicks in for us.
Which we hope will be soon.
Fingers crossed.
And I know that the park actually opened up summer activities last week for, you know, kind of like a carnival thing going on. Tell us a little about that.
It was our winter carnival. Today's actually the last day. So if you haven't been out there to check it out, come on out. We've got our winter our chairlift open, our Nordic chairlift open for scenic chairlift rides. But like I said, we were able to make some snow early, but not enough to get the Nordic jumps open. So we pivoted around and pushed that snow into tubing area. So we were able to build a little bit of a lane for kids and families to come up, slide around, get to experience the jumps. We actually opened up one of our adventure courses as well. Had some fire pits out there and big screen playing winter videos and just a place for people to be able to come out and get hot chocolate and hang with their kids when they weren't on the slopes. So super excited to see how that worked out. You know, great appreciation of the community for coming out to participate in that. And like I said, we're going out today with the last day of that. So come on out and check it out. It's open till 4.
Great. And I know that Uphill Access is meant to open tomorrow. What's the situation looking like there?
Yes, absolutely. You know, obviously, I think people understand where the snowpack is. January 1st is kind of our predicted date on a normal year, and we've kind of been tracking along with that. So we'll continue, hopefully this weekend we see a little precipitation. As that snow builds up in those areas, we will continue to communicate out to our pass holders and the community to be able to come up when that's open. Obviously, we're hoping we get into January, things get cold and Mother Nature kicks in, and then we can go ahead and get that area going. But we're sort of just on standby right now until that happens. But there are still some passes out there, so hopefully if they missed out earlier and they want to come out and check that out once some snow gets on the ground, you can still do that.
Yeah, and I know the uphill access was wildly successful last year. Mm-hmm. I think there were around 400 passes, and they sold out very quickly. You've increased the number of passes.
We're right up around 800 passes available, and we're just around 500 sold. So, like I said, there's still some availability out there. I think probably the weather is playing that with folks a little bit. Want to see what the conditions will end up providing. But it's a great area. We did a little more thinning in the uphill areas. We also changed the access road that most people were familiar with from last year to make that a little bit wider and a little bit more of a consistent grade getting up there. There was some feedback from the community on that kind of bottleneck area right at the bottom, but for the most part, people loved it. It's a great introductory area if you want to get into backcountry skiing, as well as some challenging terrain for those people who want to get after their powder shots for sure.
Great. And as far as some of the, you've talked a little bit about the training programs at the mm-hmm. park. I'm wondering if you can kind of give more of an overview of what kind of programs the park provides and kind of why it's important to provide those programs in the area.
Absolutely. Our partner club, resident club, Park City Ski and Snowboard, based out of the Utah Olympic Park, and really over 1,000 kids in that program from all the different ski disciplines around, whether it's freestyle skiing, alpine racing, cross country, snowboard, and we really pride ourselves on being able to provide the terrain and the experience for these kids to be able to come out, experience their different passions, really, and figure out what they want to do and see how far they can take it. So we really try to provide the backbone for all of that. And then Park City Ski and Snowboard has a great contingent of coaches and programming and philosophy to be able to train these kids going forward. And so we work hand in hand with them to, as they have different needs and resources, we really try to provide what we can going forward. And again, obviously the Olympics in Italy this year will highlight that kind of progression and pipeline for kids. So, you know, there's always that goal, 2034 coming up, and having kids continue to develop in that way. But really, we're a community-oriented group. You know, we want to make sure that we're providing, even if you don't want to go to the Olympics, we want to make sure that you can follow your passion and continue to grow as a human being. So.
Yeah, and speaking of the Olympics, there are a lot of Olympics athletes who train at the park. Mm-hmm. Are there any still there? I know a lot of them are out at their World Cups this winter season across the world. So tell us a little more about that.
The competition calendar is definitely underway, and obviously looking forward to the Deer Valley World Cup this year, and it had to pivot due to the weather as well. So a little bit of disappointment there, but looking forward to next year. So, yeah, a lot of the athletes are on the road. We actually had the FIL Luge World Cup back the first week of December, which was very successful, had about 1,000 people come out to spectate that event. The athletes loved it, the officials loved it. It was a really, really great experience for that competition. And then those athletes packed up and they headed back to Europe to continue their competition journey, headed towards Italy in February. So not a ton of the elite athletes around right now, but again, that development group is still out there. And as we head towards February as well, we're really looking forward to being able to activate around the Olympics and provide some opportunities for people to come up and watch different, do watch parties and a few other areas to really get people engaged and be able to see the development, the next generation of athletes out training on the hill, and then turn their attention to the big screen and see the Olympic athletes performing over in Italy as well. So,
yeah, and I know that Park City is also planning on doing some activations during the Olympics. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're very, very Olympic-oriented community, which is very cool to see.
Absolutely.
Is there anything else you think we should know about what's going on at the Utah Olympic Park?
Well, as I mentioned, our Winter Carnival wraps up today, but our public bobsled experience still happening. Check out our website for that. That's going all rest of the winter as well, and once in a lifetime experience. So if you're just coming into town or you have family coming into town, come check that as well. And just watch our website for uphill updates, and we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, we'll be waiting to see some snow.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Great, thank you.
We've been speaking with Utah Olympic Park General Manager Jamie Kimball. The Utah Avalanche Center is reminding skiers and riders about unstable conditions in the backcountry after multiple slides over the Christmas holiday. KPCW's Sydney Weaver reports changing weather conditions have created an unstable snowpack.
The Avalanche Center is reporting moderate avalanche danger in the backcountry this week after recent Wasatch Mountain storms. UAC forecaster Drew Hardesty says the best and safest skiing and riding in the backcountry will be on low-angled slopes in the middle and upper elevations.
When you're out in the backcountry today, you're going to see loose dry, wet loose avalanches in their respective habitats.
He says recreators could encounter two separate slide issues. Christmas Eve winds created slabs in elevations above 10,000 feet that could slide, but won't be severe unless skiers or riders enter steeper terrain. The serious slide problem is the hard slab avalanches.
What I would call low probability, high consequence, and that's triggering a hard slab avalanche that steps 2 to 3 feet deep down into old faceted snow.
That old snow is under a crust that formed after early December rain, and if that crust breaks, it could be dangerous. He says one of these slides happened between Alta and Brighton over the weekend.
This is 1 to 3 feet deep and a couple hundred feet wide. It's very close call. These are the types of avalanches that are going to kill you.
Hardesty says the rider who triggered the avalanche was not injured in the slide, but triggered a second one while avoiding the first. 4 backcountry skiers or riders have been caught and carried in slides since Sunday. None were seriously injured. So far, no one has died in a Utah avalanche this season. For more information and to see the Utah Avalanche Center's daily report, visit kpcw.org. Sydney Weaver, KPCW News.
KPCW's Connor Thomas sat down with Austin Smith from the Idaho Ski Area Bogus Basin to talk about a novel snowbanking or keeping strategy, tarps. Let's hear from them.
This is KPCW's Connor Thomas, and I'm here with the Director of Innovation and Marketing at Bogus Basin Resort across the border in Idaho. Austin, thank you so much for being here with us.
No problem. Thank you for inviting me, Connor.
All right. So the reason that we wanted to talk to you is that Bogus is doing an interesting pilot program this year, testing tarps to store snow to aid the early season operations. Can you talk about what led to this decision and describe what you're doing?
Yeah. So Bogus Basin made the choice to check out some different technology from overseas over in Finland. Working on preserving snow from one season to the next, which is not a new concept. However, Snow Secure, which is the company that produces these foam, polystyrene, insulated, vinyl-coated, proprietary snow storage system. It looks like tarps when it's all out, but it's kind of these successive series of panels that are tied together with Velcro that are deployed down a pile of snow. They sell a product that's for storing snow season to season, and that snow storage example has been done before with sawdust, straw, wood chips, different kind of backyard engineering techniques to store snow season to season. And we were interested in trying that, and in the process stumbled across a actual company that sells a product for storing snow season to season that they were confident would work in all elevations, all temperatures, all aspects. And so we figured we'd give it a shot.
And it comes first in a pilot version before they sell you the full product, is my understanding. So what kind of tests have you been doing this season, and what kind of results are you getting from it?
Yeah, when we learned about it, we were like, cool, let's do it. Let's roll right into it. And they told us to pump the brakes. They won't sell you a whole system right out the gate. They want you to purchase a small portion of the system to prove that you understand how it works, you understand the limitations of it, the amount of space you need for it, the amount of snow you need to store, how you deploy it, how you wrap it up or untarp it, when to untarp it, how to spread it, and also prove that it's going to work in your climate. So last
February, I believe, after we learned about the product and had several conversations with the team over at SnowSecure. February 2025, we agreed to run the pilot program, which arrived mid-April, and we began pushing up a large pile of snow based on the measurements and diagram that they gave us with the product. They also sent out a representative to help us as we were kind of in the final stages before we started to cover it. And you build a precise shape, you know, not to exceed a certain slope angle to meet the requirements. And then the product that they shipped us in two shipping containers covers that in its entirety. And once it's all sealed up, they install some thermometers on it to measure the internal temperature and the surface temperature over the summer. And then come fall, they come back out and help you uncover it and show you that the snow's still there. And then it's up to us to decide when we use that snow. Obviously, as a pilot program, it's not enough snow to really open up any terrain of any real measure. However, this season, with it being a pretty difficult start to the season in the West, we were actually able to use the snow to kick off our Thanksgiving weekend opening on a 300-foot conveyor lift with 9 terrain park features and a lane for people to get a couple turns in.
Yeah, I want to touch on that in a moment, but what kind of temperatures were you measuring and how much snow did you lose over the summer?
So we are in a high desert in Boise. It gets pretty warm here. The surface, the top surface temperature, this is pretty crazy, the top surface temperature of the insulated pile on top of the wrapped panels reached 119 degrees. And the inside temperature of the core of the snow pile didn't get above 40 degrees.
Wow. And so I imagine that there was minimal loss. Like, how much snow went in? Can you measure by volume or, I don't know, like water equivalent, however you would measure that? And how much of the run that you mentioned last month were you able to cover?
The amount of snow going in is approximately 11 acre feet of snow, which is a little bit arbitrary for most people. I like to say a football field's a bit larger than an acre. So imagine a football field 11 feet deep in snow. And they said that we would see 70 to 80% retention of that snow. So, you know, we were basically crossing our fingers, hoping we got about 8 acre feet of snow left when it was uncovered. And I don't know, my map's a little rusty on that, but I believe an acre foot of water is about 300,000 gallons. So, you know, if we assumed it was essentially a pile of ice, which it wasn't 100% water, you're looking at about 2 to 3, like 2 million gallons, 2.5 million gallons of water. So somewhere in the 2 million gallons worth of water was stored in the form of snow. But it's easier to think about it as snow. So imagine 8 acres of terrain covered 1 foot deep in snow was essentially what we were left over with. The melt that we saw in the summer was from essentially the perimeter of the insulated pile. So you have these foam insulating panels that cover the majority of your pile. And then where those panels end, you have a geotechnical fabric that covers the toe of the slope, if you will, or the rest of the snow that's not under the panel specifically. That's designed to melt out and basically take it from like a trapezoid shape to like an ice cube. And it turns it into a block. And it forms a like several inch thick ice crust over the entirety of it. It's essentially like a giant cooler. And inside, the snow is no different than snowmaking snow. It's maybe even better than snowmaking snow because it has the whole summer to leach out the water. So it's essentially high quality snowmaking snow. And that crust, when you go to break it open in the fall, it gets processed by your cat and whatnot, and you wouldn't know the difference. But it functions like a cooler, and as long as you don't open it, it stays cold.
All right. And I mean, you didn't know it would be a horrendous early season conditions-wise when you decided to go down this route, but no one in Utah can blow any snow right now, hardly. What does your snowmaking system look like compared to this, and is this going to be your preferred alternative going forward?
Bogus Basin is entering its 84th season of operations this year, and in 2018, we installed our snowmaking system. So we were fairly late to the game on an installation of a snowmaking system, being a mountain the size of we are, especially in the climate we're in and our proximity to a metro area. It wasn't unusual to see mid-December. We've had several January openings at Bogus Basin. And since installing snowmaking, we've been able to pretty much nail an operation at Thanksgiving or earlier. We've opened, you know, terrain parks as early as Halloween since we installed snowmaking. This season's snowmaking temperatures, same thing that's being experienced in Utah. It's been next to impossible to make snow, not even getting marginal snowmaking conditions. We actually just put out a post on social media, kind of the state of snowmaking as we were making snow last weekend. And last year, by December 21st, we had 40 days of 51 days, or 51 days from the beginning of November to December 21st, we'd had 40 days of snowmaking production. This year, we got 5 days of snowmaking in November and 10 in December before December 21st. So it has been literally almost impossible to make snow. We're looking forward to some temps hopefully coming this weekend. Snow Secure itself is not a replacement for snowmaking. I would say that it is a add-on to your snowmaking system. I like to liken it to the snowmaking for snowmaking, because you use the snow you've created mid-season when you have cold, dry temperatures and you get great production. You can stockpile that snow in your snowmaking system. You can harvest your natural snow, then you store it so that you're not in a position where you're reliant on good temperatures going into the holidays or in November to make snow, or even having marginal temperatures where you get low production per gallon of water used. However, the limitations of Snow Secure would not make it a replacement for snowmaking, especially at very large mountains like the ones in the Wasatch.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a bit of an insurance policy, though, for climate change, for example, because if we keep getting warmer, or, I mean, you know, at least those pendulum swings of extreme years, it may be extremely snowy, but a lot of warm years as well, it's going to be more and more of less snowmaking, less ideal snowmaking conditions.
Absolutely. And I think that it's the unpredictability, especially of early season, or that right on the edge of marginal snowmaking temperatures, that are going to, it's going to be what makes or breaks mountains as they, especially as they go into the holidays. And Snow Secure, where it, again, it was just a pilot program for us, but it allowed us to open up and kick off our season while we were still making snow. And then we were able to connect our beginner chairlift into the carpet area where Snow Secure was. Things that I see it being super helpful for is on your beginner slopes for your early season lessons, where you've sold lessons to people who are, especially if their destination were a local mountain and don't do destination visits. But if you've got pre-commitment for beginner lessons, it's going to be no different to them whether they're skiing on snowmaking snow, snow from last year, or snow from the sky. And the terrain that they are on is low angle and it's perfectly suitable, typically wide open for a product like Snow Secure. The other thing that Snow Secure does, and the idea of preserving snow, is it allows you to shift your resources in snowmaking during those potentially small windows to other runs. So for us, we typically blow snow in our on our beginner hill, our beginner carpets, our beginner chairlift and run, and in our terrain park. Well, if we're able to say have our entire beginner run done with Snow Secure, we don't need to put labor and energy and water on that hill, have our guns over there. We can take that same component that would normally open that run and put it on another chairlift and move quicker. So it's really an accelerator to opening, but it's not going to be the solution to opening without snowmaking, at least for the larger areas.
Gotcha. And of course, this is all your pilot year, though maybe a little bit lucky with the poor conditions. Are you going to keep this going for the long term?
Yeah, we're super excited to expand on the program. Our goal, provided this season makes a comeback and we see substantial snowfall towards the back end of the season and opportunity to make snow, is to expand our Snow Secure system so that we can open our coach chairlift, which is about 300 feet worth of elevation. It's our beginner never have I ever chairlift that people progress to once they're off of our conveyor lifts, and open that chairlift top to bottom with never having to make snow, all off of last year's snow. And that would mean that we can do it on demand. If we wanted to open on November, it's whenever we want to push out the piles. We'll likely uncover those piles somewhere in the mid-October, early November window, you definitely don't want to have substantial snowfall on top of a pile that is still insulated, as the snow will freeze to the snow secure product and it creates a hazardous environment for removing it. It could, you know, freeze the product to the ground. I mean, think about sticking your tongue to a metal pole. So you want to be ahead of the curve when it comes to removing the insulating tarps. The good news is that ice crust continues to form, continues to create cold energy storage and insulate the pile. So it becomes a decision on when you push it out. So we're really excited to give it a go. And we are absolutely hoping for a change in the weather so we can ensure that we've got the snow to store.
Likewise, change in the weather. For Utahns that don't know you, you're right outside of Boise. Can you talk a little bit about what Bogus Basin is?
Yeah, so Bogus Basin Mountain Recreation Area is going into their 84th season. We just celebrated our 83rd birthday back here on December 20th. We are a 501c3 nonprofit mountain recreation area with a mission to provide affordable, accessible, and fun year-round mountain recreation and education. We're 2,600 acres with 10 lifts. We typically operate mid-November till mid-April. These last couple seasons, we've actually seen some May operating days. We're open during our peak season 7 days a week from 9 or 10 a.m. in the morning till 10 p.m. at night. And we are a mountain built for the community, by the community. We were, our project was, you know, conceived when the local Idahoans said we want to have skiing like other places, and they banded together and started building a mountain just 30 minutes outside of the downtown area. It's definitely a different model in the ski industry to be a nonprofit. We're managed or governed, essentially owned, if you will, by 13 volunteer board members who are sourced from a 100-person association. And every dollar made at Bogus Basin is reinvested right back into the mountain. We're rounding out right here about 10 years of heavy development, over $70 million of cash directly invested in the mountain, all money generated from revenue at the mountain. So it's basically regenerative revenue, or there's this circular investment. The community invests in us, and we then invest in the mountain, and the community continues to want to come up here. So we're a bit of a unicorn in the industry, and we're super proud to have been operating for 83 years.
All right. Well, Director of Marketing and Innovation there at Bogus, Austin Smith, thank you so much for coming on the program.
No problem. Appreciate it, Connor.
Starting tomorrow, Utahns will no longer be able to use their SNAP benefits to buy soda. The Utah News Dispatch reports the change stems from a new law that puts restrictions on the benefits from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the country's largest food assistance program. In June, federal officials and President Donald Trump's administration approved Utah's waiver, along with applications from Idaho and Arkansas, making them the latest states to ban certain foods from SNAP purchases as part of Make America Healthy Again efforts. And the Utah Department of Workforce Services says the change does not affect the amount of SNAP benefits individuals receive, just a change in what they can purchase. This New Year's, the Department of Public Safety is offering rideshare gift cards to help Utahns get home safely. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports DUI enforcement will be up.
The Utah Highway Patrol and other law enforcement organizations will be out on state roads in full force this New Year's. UHP Sergeant Mike Alexander recommends that revelers stay safe by making a plan and sticking to it.
If you're choosing to partake in one of these substances that does impair your ability to drive, have a plan in place to get to your destination safely. Either participate in those activities at home or arrange for a designated driver.
Another strategy is using rideshare services or apps, and the Utah Department of Public Safety, Division of Alcoholic Beverage Services, and WCF Insurance are offering $10 Lyft gift cards through New Year's Day. It's a harm reduction strategy to get drunk or otherwise impaired drivers off the roads. Utah's blood alcohol concentration limit is 0.05%, the lowest in the U.S. In other states, it's 0.08. UHP says the average BAC for alcohol-related DUI arrests in Utah is 0.14%, and that alcohol-related crashes are 15 times more likely to be fatal than other types of crashes in Utah. More information at kpcw.org. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
You've been listening to the Local News Hour. I'm Christine Weller, filling in for Leslie Thatcher.